Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're coming back here on WWL. We're live on AMFM.com and the always for free Odyssey app. Check it out wherever you get your apps. And we're going to be talking more Saints. We got some text in here. One guy says, I guess I missed it, but who is going to back up Derek Carr? That's a good question, 2015, because I don't think we know yet. We asked Dennis Allen about it on Tuesday, and he basically said, you'll know when I know. It's still a competitive situation, and you know that irked a few people, especially you know the Rebel Alliance that seems to be forming on Saints Twitter to try to tip the scales here, trying to put their thumb on the scale for the Rattlesnake. I'm a fan of the Rattlesnake, but you know one thing that I think people take for granted is DA is never been a coach, and he never will be a coach that kind of hands things to rookies, and I think that kind of becomes apparent, like. Why do you think they traded for John Ridgeway rather than saying, hey, we need someone to replace Colin Saunders early in the season? Why not just throw the rookie in there and see what happens? It's just not how he likes to operate. You know, and so I think it almost flies in the face of his ideal of what a coach should do to just say, yeah, it's the rookie's job. He's earned it. You know? Like there's a reason that he calls Kool-Aid McKinstry JaQuincy. And not even his mother calls him JaQuincy, right? Like, I think that is very much a vibe that he believes in. I think that's, you know, that probably comes from Sean Payton. Sean Payton was never a guy that handed anything to rookies either. But I do think that's part of it. And for more, you know, from John Ridgeway, they traded for John from the Commanders. They sent their 2025 sixth rounder to Washington in exchange for a 2025 seventh rounder from Washington. So, in other words, you basically got him for nothing.
I love those trades. They're so funny.
Well, because the team trading him wants to feel like they got something.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a sixth rounder versus seventh rounder, it's usually a player that like only you're interested in anyway.
You're making sure that you can get someone that doesn't have to process through different claims and stuff like
that. It's just so you can say, well, we didn't just cut him. We got something.
Yeah, you got a seventh round pick.
And it's funny because in a lot of instances, you probably would have got the same player because at that point, it's like only you're scouting this guy anyway. But, you know, the Saints got their guy. And so let's hear from John. He talked to reporters in the locker room today.
So were you a little surprised when you got the news that you had gotten traded, or what was kind of your reaction?
I was kind of just waiting for it to happen, honestly, just because I knew my outcome, and kind of knew what was going on with the team, and talking with my agent. It was just a matter of fact when, and it happened yesterday at 4:00. So glad to be here now.
When did the Saints get on your radar? Like, did you know early on that they were one of the teams interested in you, or?
I had no idea. I tried to keep it to where my agent didn't really tell me much, just because I wanted to stay focused on preseason. But I mean, I'm glad to be here. You know, it's a nice organization to play for.
I think like Washington, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn kind of indicated that this would be a better scheme for you. Do you feel like that's the case, or how do you?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Just the way they play and the D-line coach and the style they teach, and I'm excited to get to learn the playbook and get to play along the guys on the D-line.
There are a couple guys here that you know, Kalik and Chase.
Yeah,
to be reunited.
It was pretty nice just to see some faces I already recognized, you know, in a new spot. So being able to have them to count on to where, you know, if I'm not, you know, feeling my way around town good enough or feeling around the facility, I can lean on them when I need it.
Plan to suplex any guys while you're here?
I don't think the D-line will cover the fines for that, but I mean, if it happens, it happens. But I think my pockets are a little deeper now since my rookie year, so.
What can you bring to this defense?
Definitely like a blue-collar mentality. Like, I'm going to bring my hard hat and lunch pail every day to work. So that's what I plan on bringing. It's just a good mindset and good attitude to attack the day. And whatever happens, happens. I can live with it.
Cover it yet from the up-downs?
Yeah, man. 40? Oh, they were telling me that, and I was like, this dude must be lying, like, you know, pulling my chain a little bit. But no, he was real about it. But it was definitely nice seeing I had the team around me supporting me, so that was nice about it. They just leave me over there to suffer, so it was cool to have the camaraderie around, you know, versus just a new guy coming in. I'll just make him do 40 burpees real quick, so it's cool.
Did you know that coming in?
No, I had no idea. They put an old picture of me in college up and said XL. It was like 10 minus 50, and you got 40 burpees. I was like, man, I don't know how I'm going to recover from that. But I ended up getting back. My leg's back, so that's good.
What when did you start to feel it around? Like, what number?
You know? Oh, as soon as it got to about 23, 27, I was like, I got about 13, 17 more. Like, come on. It was really getting bad when the spit starts coming out, you know? It's like, but no, it wasn't bad. Like I said, I was happy I had the guys around me. So it was cool. Cool experience. I definitely don't look forward to doing it again next year, but it was a good experience.
I don't know what he's talking about. I just did 40 up-downs while he was talking.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not even breathing heavy.
No, I can confirm.
Yeah. You watched the whole thing?
Yeah, in 3 minutes.
That's a lie. I'm lying to you. I did not do that, and I will not do that.
No.
But no, have you seen the clip of
where he like picks up the
like it's
the
not an
back?
Exaggeration. He full suplexes.
Was that against
the
Texans?
It was the Texans.
Yeah, I saw that clip where he literally picks up the running back, and I mean, suplex is a strong word, but that's what he does.
It is an apt description of what happened. And I don't know why he chose to do that.
And the running back ran right into him, too.
Yeah,
he was on a block.
The running back was basically like, okay, take me. Like, I'm done. And John was like, you know what? I'm going to make him remember this day. I'm going to make sure there's a clip that I can point to. I'm sure he mentioned he got fined for that. That's a penalty. You can't do that. That's
understandable.
You're allowed to tackle somebody. You're not allowed to take their soul at the same time. But, you know, I think that he, you know, whenever you can add a guy for basically nothing, obviously you're paying him, but in terms of like, you're able to add a player that has 32 games of experience in the NFL, like he's played a good bit, and this late in the game, you know, I think that's a solid addition, and we'll see how it goes. You know, he's a physical guy. He's a guy who can line up there and move some people, can take on a double team. I think it's a good I can't recall who asked the question, but yeah, he has played with Khalik Hudson, who's on the practice squad, and Chase Young, who is on the defensive line. So he has some familiarity with that group.
Yeah, former guy out of, Illinois State was where he started, but he transferred to Arkansas, then spent time with the Dallas Cowboys after being drafted in the fifth round in 2022, and then spent the last 2 years with the Washington Commanders before getting traded to the Saints. So, and I mean, the trade, as we mentioned before we even got into the audio, it was nothing.
Was he at Illinois State? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, he was at – when was he at Illinois State?
Yeah.
2017 through 2020.
Oh, you know what? I thought maybe Colin Saunders and he crossed paths, but Colin is the Western Illinois.
Yeah.
Which has got to be the Illinois State's the Redbirds?
Yes.
There's got to be some. I think there's someone on the Saints from Illinois State. I'll have to double check that. But no, and I mean, that's the. You know, it's funny. If you had asked me to bet money on any position the Saints would add a piece after the draft, I would not have bet defensive tackle.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Christian Boyd was someone I think that we were all kind of high on as far as a draft pick, but with the trade that they made, just kind of reviewing it, what happened yesterday, Commanders trading John Ridgeway and a seventh round pick in exchange for a sixth round pick. So you swap a sixth for a seventh, and then you get a defensive tackle that you really like, obviously, and a guy that has, you know, as of 2023, total tackles 55, a forced fumble, a couple pass deflections too, is a big defensive tackle. He's got size too, Jeff, 6'5".
Hey, he's a big dude.
Like, yeah. you put him next to Brian Bercy on the defensive tackle spot, like week one with Bryce Young, who's not a big dude, having to see over those two guys in the middle, it's going to be kind of tough, I think.
Oh, you know what? I think it's Joe Woods.
Mike had brought that up on draft night.
Yes, because I think, and this is funny, that's the only reason I know is because Deuce asked him about Grambling. And he was like, I didn't go to Grambling. I went to Illinois State.
Oh, it was Deuce that had asked it. Okay.
Yes. I think Haas might have asked it, too. It was a conversation. But yeah. They didn't cross paths at Illinois State because Joe Woods played there in 1988.
Yeah, quite some time ago.
But there is a connection. Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, went to the same college. There we go. We figured it out. I knew there was an Illinois State.
I mean, I think that is kind of funny, though, because you're adding another gigantic defensive tackle, which now you have two of them in that room as far as guys that are 6'5".
6'5 dudes who...
On the interior.
Yeah, yeah.
It could wreak some havoc.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, and just to kind of bridge off that, I did have a segue there and I failed to take it. But, you know, the position I would have bet money that they added pieces at was offensive line. And, you know, one of the interesting subplots of this season is Eric McCoy is now the unquestioned leader in that offensive line room. You know, last year, I think it's tough to be the leader of an offensive line room when you're not necessarily the elder statesman of it, right? And last year you had Andres Pete and Ryan Ramczyk, both of them had been there quite a while longer.
Yeah, now Eric is the old guy
by
up
far.
Front.
It's not even that close.
I mean, Caesar was a little bit after.
Caesar was 2020?
Yeah, and McCoy was 2019.
Was he the next year? I guess he was. I always lose track of the amount of time that passed from 2019 to 2021 because COVID was there.
Understandably so. Yeah,
it feels like an eternity.
But as far as the skins on the wall that Bobby always likes to talk about, it's Eric McCoy.
And it's also because Eric was this day one starter at center, so it kind of felt like 2019 was his third season, even though it was his rookie season, but he's just been so good from day one. But let's hear Eric. He talked in the locker room today as well. I believe we have that queued up.
There's been obviously a revamp of the offensive line, three new offensive linemen along with yourself and Cesar Ruiz, but you guys understand this, and you are now the veteran of the line. Just what has that process been like?
Well, first, I'm going to say that I will only be able to answer this question if we refer to him as Cesar McCoy from now on. That's the first things first. I need that to be in the interview, Cesar McCoy.
He will always be Cesar McCoy.
Cesar McCoy now. But yeah, I think we have a ton of talent. I think it all comes on execution. I think Tali, first round pick, pick 14? Mm-hmm. Transitioning sides, I think he's super talented. He's coming in and he's worked this camp. He missed a few days with, whatever he had going on. But I think he's a ball player, and I really believe that he'll have a great rookie year. And I'm excited to see what this year, his first real game, what that looks like, because I think that he can be a really good player for this team for a long time. Who's our new starter? Lucas. Lucas, veteran, savvy guy, knows a lot, has been in this system before. So even things where I haven't known all the answers, he's there to even help me out. Because he's been in this for a couple years and he's done it. So I'm excited to be playing next to him because he's super intelligent. Who's our new starter? Trevor, once again, transitioning sides are in a new position. I think that he's made strides over the past couple of years. And I'm hoping this is going to be a good year for him.
You know, it can be a fluid situation on the offensive line. We've seen that in the past where, guys get injured and those kinds of things. But there's rarely been a time where you started the season with three new starters. How unsettling is that, if it's unsettling at all?
Yeah. First off, your breath smells really good. I'm sorry, it's right in my face. But I would say that I'm not unsettled. I try not to be unsettled in any situation, in fact. It'll be different, but I believe in all of the guys that we have, and I believe in the talent that we have in the room, and I believe in the offensive system to put us in the best place possible to go out there and execute and to ultimately be a really good offensive line.
How is it being the bedrock of this offensive line? Because you're the guy who's the veteran. You've been here the longest, and you're the longest tenured, and you're obviously you're the guy that they're looking at and counting on.
Yeah, it's all part of the job. I know that these guys rely on me. I know that I am the old guy in the room and that I have a standard that I set for myself. I expect them to hold me to that standard if I'm not living up to it. It is what it is. It's part of the job. And I am excited for it. I'm excited to kind of sit in the leadership role the second year in a row. I think it has given me an opportunity to grow and really challenge myself to be more vocal, to be more demanding of the people around me.
Yeah. Now, you say they hold you to a standard. Obviously, you hold them to the standard, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm. How do you go about that? Are you kind of a chastiser? Are you a guy who, a cheerleader? Of, you know, how do you get guys to perform the way you want them to?
Yeah, I think it all depends on the guy and depends on the time. You know, some guys do better with encouragement. I don't want to say cheerleading, but encouragement. Some guys do better with when you get on there. That's just the reality of it. Like, if you ever see me and C's going back and forth, like, we'd be yelling at each other because, like, that's kind of how we communicate the best. I know it sounds dumb, but, like, he knows I'm serious when I start yelling. I know he's serious if he starts yelling. But a guy like Tali, rookie, you want to build him up. You want to encourage him. See, I think it just depends on the guy, and I think it depends on the moment.
Sorry, what did Eric say? I stopped listening after he complimented John DeSage's breath.
Yeah, that was interesting. No, I mean, a lot of talk about the offensive line and the starting guys in that room. Yeah. And right now, if you're looking at it, as he mentioned, Taliese Fuaga, super high ceiling as a rookie prospect, a guy that we all have very high expectations for entering his first year with the black and gold at left tackle. And then left guard, you have Lucas Patrick. He's obviously the quote-unquote bedrock of the Saints offensive line at center. And then right guard right now, Cesar Ruiz. But going back to what we talked about, who's the backup center? Could be Cesar. It could be Lucas.
Either way, he's still the right guard.
No, and I understand
Cesar,
that.
Cesar McCoy?
Yeah, Cesar McCoy. And then at right tackle, you have Trevor. So, I mean, that's still an interesting question. Yeah, for now. A couple depth pieces, like, as you mentioned, Landon Young on the left side and Oliudo on the right side. But who's the backup center?
You know, the funny thing is, to me, the nightmare scenario for this season is not even Trevor Penning is unplayable. It's that Tali struggles. Because the thing is, Trevor, or whoever, and Oli's going to struggle on the right side too if you have to start Oli. You're just not in a great scenario there. But you can help them. You can help one side. You can throw a tight end over there. You can chip with a running back. You can't hide two struggling tackles.
No.
And so, like, you're banking a lot on Tali being solid from day one. And if he's not, then they are in dire straits. Like, not just like, this is going to be a struggle. They will not have offense. It will be a disaster.
Derek Carr is going to be in trouble.
Right. You'll be better off starting Spencer Rattler just because at least I've watched him run around behind what basically was a non-existent offensive line at South Carolina. He has some experience with it.
Yeah. Well, that was a note that I think Nick Underhill at New Orleans Stuff Football had put this out when Matt Judon ended up going with the Falcons.
Yeah.
And so the first 4 weeks for the Saints, a lot of the premier edge rushers are actually on the right side that will be attacking Trevor Penning. And so you're going to need to help Trevor at points with some of those guys that he's going to be going up against, where you're probably going to see Jadeveon Clowney coming off that side for the Carolina Panthers.
South Carolina.
You're probably going to be seeing Micah Parsons coming off that side for the Dallas Cowboys. This is just the first 4 weeks, by the way.
Yep.
You're probably going to see Brandon Graham coming off the right side for the Eagles. And then finally with the Falcons, Matt Judon. It's a lot of premium pass rushers that you're going to see in those first 4 weeks coming off the right side of the line. So Taliese Fuaga, you know, once again, super high expectations for him. They're probably not going to be giving him that much help early on, Jeff.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, they're. I don't think they can.
No, and, I don't think so either.
So, like, hopefully he delivers on that promise.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.